Now, when it comes to cover-ups, I'm usually pretty slow to accept that one's being perpetrated. However, sometimes the evidence is so overwhelming I've got no choice, and this is one of those situations. Matter of fact, the cover-up is happening right now, in real time, which is why I'm making this video. I need your help in order to save this data before it's all erased from the public forever. And I'm not just talking crap here. I've got examples of this evidence being deliberately hidden or destroyed, and I can show you how this has even caused academics to miss things they normally never would. The fact is, the history of deformed skulls, like those we see in Paracas, Peru, has been hidden to such a degree that I can say with total confidence there is a cover-up. So give me a few minutes and I want to disclose the details of this uncomfortable truth. Hi, my name's Dan and welcome to Dedunking. Now, when it comes to the cultural practice of artificially elongating the skulls of your children, I'd noticed that this was much more difficult to research than other topics when I started looking into the Chinook people up here in the Pacific Northwest. I had already heard how the Native Americans in the Columbia Basin practiced cranial modification before, but it was my friend Sean Mooney who told me how common the practice was in the region, and indeed it was common. So much so that when Lewis and Clark and other early European explorers encountered the Chinook and nearby tribes, they all remarked on the amount of modified skulls they saw in these people's populations. But when I would look up elongated skull on Google, it would always send me back to Paracas, Peru. You know, the ones that Brian Forrester likes to talk about. But the fact of the matter is that the Chinook people have the highest concentration that's reported in history at around 3,000 elongated skull burials in Longview, Washington, around 200 years ago. But if I look elongated skulls up, I don't get those. I always get sent to those cool ones in Peru. But I just assumed this was research bias playing out in the algorithm. Just like if you Google pyramid, you'll get the three big boys in Egypt every single time, and you'll have to specify if you want to find the ones in Sudan. So I figured it was just a frustrating time sink, not an intentional plot to hide the truth of the skulls. I mean, that just sounds weird to me, even comically so. They're hiding the truth of the elongated skulls, even in places where there's multiple accounts of the people doing it to their children in recorded history. The appearance of the infant, however, while in this state of compression, is whimsically hideous, and its little black eyes, we are told, being forced out by the tightness of the bandages, resemble those of a mouse choked in a trap. Washington Irving, 1849, Astoria. Washington Irving was America's first international best-selling author, and that 1836 book, Astoria, was required reading in this country from the 1830s all the way up until the early 1900s. For over 60 years, multiple generations, it was very influential and well-known to scholars. But if you look up Astoria book now, you'll instead get this 2014 book by Peter Stark. Now, nothing against Peter, but this is bullshit, okay? If I look up Uncle Tom's Cabin, I don't find the Warrant song. I find the best-selling book, even though it was from a long time ago. But it doesn't talk about the practice of elongated skulls outside of Peru. Not that Paracas doesn't have its issues, too, and I've covered them in detail before. I mean, we had Rockefeller spending tens of thousands of dollars to buy four skulls, according to history. We had archaeologists open nearly 100 of the grave bundles that may or may not contain deformed skulls and only record the contents of six. We had public openings of the bundles erased from history. So it seems obvious to me the best skulls, the ones that look most natural, like maybe they weren't artificially deformed to look the way they do. Those would be the ones that would have ended up in the hands of guys like Rockefeller, and we don't really get them in the record. But I dismiss this as financially motivated. I didn't think that this was some, like, serious cover-up. However, when my research returned to the Pacific Northwest, I noticed the lack of images of Native Americans with elongated skulls, and that seemed really odd because this was an extremely ubiquitous practice in the region. So common, in fact, that when Lewis and Clark met with the Chinook chief Concomly, they witnessed hundreds of people with elongated heads. Who was Concomly, you ask? Well, only one of the most famous Native Americans from like 1814 to 1950 or so. And then his memory seems to have faded into obscurity, but when Lewis and Clark first published their journals back in 1814, Concomly and Sacagawea were the two Native Americans mentioned in their notes that captivated the public. So much so that in the book Astoria that I mentioned moments ago, we see Konkomli as a central figure in the Pacific Northwest. A shrewd trader, intelligent strategist, careful negotiator, brilliant orator, and he had two notable physical features. He was blind in one eye, and he had a very pronounced elongated skull. He was famous for having an elongated skull. This was so well known that in this 1960 Smithsonian Institute book my friend Sean loaned me, the title is The Chinook Sign of Freedom, A Study of the Skull of the Famous Chief Konkomli. He was very well known. And here's his skull. Clearly not shaped like mine or yours, it was studied for a century before being repatriated. And about a decade later, the Smithsonian printed that book, and shortly thereafter, it fell into obscurity, so much so that the Smithsonian's own archives don't even have a picture of the cover, let alone the contents. The only way that I know of to get it is to borrow it from a friend, or you can get it from my Patreon page or my channel member page. I've posted the pictures of the PDF so that you can read this thing, because it's lost, man. It's gone. At any rate, this once famous chief turning into an obscure oddity made me scratch my head. I mean, I live in the Pacific Northwest, less than 300 miles from where Konkomli lived, and I hadn't heard of him until I started this research. But that wasn't nearly as strange as the revelation of the title of that Smithsonian book. The distortion of the skull was a requirement for the people in the region that were free, that weren't slaves. Yes, the Chinook kept slaves, and like the title of the book says, a modified cranium was the Chinook sign of freedom. Slaves were not allowed to do this. And the practice was everywhere, so much so that when Lewis and Clark met the natives east of the Cascade Mountains, those people called their native cousins to the west of the Cascades flatheads. It was everywhere. All the tribes in that region practiced some sort of artificial cranial deformation, or ACD as it is known in academic circles. Now, not only is this seldom spoke of, but the evidence for it is also rare. Most images of Konkomli lacked this pronounced skull, and most depictions of the Chinook or Salish people, who also practice the same sort of cranial modification, seldom look any different than your typical 1960s Gunsmoke Indian. And even in places where you would expect to see this highlighted, you seldom do. My friend Sammy, who's a videographer for Wild Wolf Productions, went to college at the University of Oregon and studied Native American stuff from the people right there and never once heard of this practice. And it was happening right there. And when I looked for information about the burial sites and other places where these skulls were located just a couple centuries ago, I again found difficulties. Even when I added the exact latitude and longitude for the Memelusalahi, which is a Chinook word for burial ground, and then referenced the Wikipedia page where I learned of the sites existed, Google still wanted to take me to the one easy-to-find place, the state park, the thing everybody knew about. A lot like Paracas, Peru, I was being funneled to the popular site. Again, this makes me suspicious, but I wasn't ready to say that this is a cover-up for certain. The evidence for that came when I started looking for the connection between the Pacific Northwest and Paracas. Now, I've babbled so much about Easter Island that I'll spare you me going through it all again. Suffice to say that Polynesians and the location that they inhabit is an area that I frequently research in my hunt for lost civilizations. The Kelp Highway Hypothesis, if you're not aware, is an archaeological hypothesis that claims humans settled the west coast of the Americas by boat, hopping down the coast much quicker than a journey overland would have allowed for. Putting two and two together, it's really not a jump to assume that these coastal seafarers might have ventured out into the open ocean a little bit and settled an island or two, perhaps before they even reached the Americas. And when I looked at Easter Island, I recalled the recent DNA studies that proved that there was some contact between the Pacific Islands and South America. But on Easter Island, they did not modify the skulls of their children artificially, at least according to everything that we know, they never have. However, the Moai, those enigmatic statues that everybody thinks of when they hear the words Easter Island, they have elongated, pointy heads that many have said resembles the elongated skulls. And they did mark the skulls of their deceased with patterns that sometimes resemble those that we see in South America, specifically the candelabra of the Andes, which is located within an hour's walk from the caves in Peru where all those famous skulls came from, and the candelabra is visible about 12 miles out to sea. So the possibility of a coastal connection still seemed viable to me, and I started looking at other islands, and I was surprised to find that there were a lot of islands in the Pacific that practiced cranial modification. Hawaii, for example, in a 1980 study where they looked at 76 different skulls from pre-contact indigenous Hawaiians, 8.9% of those had modified craniums. That's a huge number when you really think about it. But when I look online for photographs or even drawings of these skulls, I can find nothing at all. And this trend continues. Tonga is a remote island in the Pacific that has one of the strangest elongated skulls in the record. It's 96% as wide as it is long. I mean, that's almost Stewie Griffin. That's like flat-faced orangutan turf, right? And the skull was looted in the 1830s and just repatriated in 2024. And no pictures or drawings of it are available to the public at all. The museum that repatriated the skull will publish the measurements, sure, but the pictures or even drawings are considered to be off limits. Why? Well, to the natives in some of these islands, like Hawaii, they have beliefs that imply photographs of the remains of their ancestors is just not a good thing. But Tonga? Not so much. But the museum in Australia decided that it was best not to allow the public to see the pictures of the skull anyway, or drawings of it. Why? This is to decolonize museums and to quit treating human remains as curiosities, but academics can still access these pictures that are apparently so damaging. And it's the rank and file people that, pay the taxes that keep these institutions open that can't access these things, which is bad enough on its own. But we're not the only ones thrust into darkness here because the way that this information is being mishandled or just not properly dispensed to the public has academics tripping over themselves as well. This map is from a 1980 paper, and it was derived from a 1938 book that in part covers the practice of cranial deformation. I apologize for the potato quality of this photograph. I can't find a better one, but if you look close, you can still see what we're looking at here. It's showing the distribution around the world of cranial modification, and the different types are also highlighted. Now look at this map from a 2019 paper titled Earliest Known Intentionally Deformed Human Cranium from Asia. This map has a few errors, like Kennewick Man being labeled possibly an artificially deformed skull, which is something that's long not been considered to be the case. But the most glaring error comes from the region we are discussing. You notice anything different between these two maps? The Pacific Islands are almost completely omitted from the more modern map. Numerous islands that we know for a fact had to practice, like Hawaii, are excluded. This is the result of either the laziness of the paper's authors and the people that peer-reviewed it, extreme ignorance on their part, or perhaps they're part of the cover-up as well, but honestly, I don't think so. I think they just made a mistake, and I don't really think it's their fault. I think this is a top-down thing. I think this is why all the museums act the same and pretend the native cultures are just a big monolith. I mean, some of the Amish have a belief about photographing them, but this isn't shared by all of them, and the Mennonites don't feel the same as the Amish do. They can't come to a consensus, and they live right next door to each other. These people that used to play squish the skull with their kids live thousands of miles apart, but we're expected to believe that they all have the same belief system? Now, as I said earlier, Rockefeller was into these skulls and spent big bucks on them. But he wasn't alone. In fact, he was pretty late to the game. A full century before he was even buying those skulls from Peru, the skulls of the islanders and the Native Americans in the Pacific Northwest had been one of the most popular curiosities from rich people of the time. The bogus idea that the shape of a skull influenced the thinking and personality, known as phrenology, a now debunked science, is what I've blamed in the past, and I still do to a degree, but we also have to consider the manner in which these things are hidden from the public. Rockefeller is said to have repatriated the four skulls that he purchased, but there are no pictures or drawings of these available to the public. These were displayed in the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art and at the American Museum of Natural History. Publicly displayed. Yet no photos exist anywhere. Whenever I go to look into this stuff, it's like there's a big vacuum that exists. When I hear about a skull with amazing measurements or ones that were cherry-picked by a guy like Rockefeller, I want to know more. And I can't. Even though the information's out there, I'm not good enough for it for some reason. It's damaging if I look at it, but it's not damaging if somebody with different letters next to their name looks at it. Which makes you wonder what's up with these things. What do they think's up with it anyway? What do they think's up with it anyway? Do they think that maybe people were emulating aliens and they thought, they had aliens that came to Earth and they were trying to make their kids' skulls like alien skulls? Or maybe it was another species of hominid. Maybe there was just one mutant person that was really smart and other people were trying to copy that. It's tough to say for sure. It's possible, even given light of recent events, that it was all part of some goofy black magic recipe.
Sean, why do you have that?
This? He's my hero.
He's a really bad guy.
No, he's not. He's a chef.
Jeffrey Epstein? This is Anthony Bourdain.
The rabbit hole just goes on and on. For example, in my video about the Pacific Northwest, I point out that the man who was responsible for about 3,000 of these elongated skull burials just disappearing. Oh, happens to be the son of a man who was a member of the Hellfire Club. And when this guy went to Hawaii, well, he just went wherever the hell he wanted. He had never been there before, but he knew where he wanted to go so much so that he was traveling in violation of what the natives were telling him at the cost of life and limb, literally. And the site where those 3,000 elongated skulls were destroyed or looted was built around as the city of Longview. By a prominent Freemason, no less, known as R.A. Long. And the mystery just keeps going. It's one that I'm about to investigate further. Sean and myself are planning to return to Longview here in just a week or two to look for evidence of a structure that the older locals seem to remember in whispers. We're also going to look for tunnels that similarly are the stuff of local legends, and there's other signs of connections between the regions and other places mentioned today. We won't be seeing any of the skulls themselves, obviously. Those are long under lock and key. I mean, it's even hard, like I said, to see a drawing of them nowadays. And that's where I really need your help. I think that, well, I know for a fact there's a lot of references to these kinds of things in the writings of sailors from the 17th and 18th and 19th centuries. There's drawings, there's even some photographs and stuff that exist. We need to archive these things, all right? I'm not saying we need to do this to violate the Native American belief system or anything, but if we're trying to research this kind of stuff, we absolutely need to be able to see the damn things. Just the numbers isn't going to do it for us. And as they're slowly taking this information and making it less and less publicly available, I mean, ultimately, even if you look at it from their perspective, from the debunkers, from the skeptics type, it's like, dude, you guys, you're leaving it to our imagination, all right? We look at this, we have a measurement, 96% wide as it is tall. Well, that sounds fucking crazy, man. And it sound probably is, but I can't see it to tell you. And that's a real problem. So again, this information's out there. Most of it's still available in some form, I would imagine, but I'm one guy and could not possibly keep up. So if you got time to dig through some archives, let me know. I'll put my email here on the screen and just email me and say skulls in the heading so that I know what we're talking about there, and send me the information that you found, because that would be very helpful. And then we can, compile it all and put it out there for everybody to see. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate it. I am going to be in Sedona, Arizona here in just a few months, a couple more months, May 1st through 3rd for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference. It'll be me and a bunch of other cool people. We'll be drinking and talking and having all kinds of great fun. Hope to see you there. Links to purchase tickets are below. There's also links to support the channel down below, and I would appreciate it if you did that as well. Also, my second channel, links to it is below. I've been debunking. If you like when I debunk the debunkers, I've moved all that stuff over to my second channel. So the people that are like, man, miss me with that negative energy, bro. Why are you feeding the trolls? They don't have to see it here. But if you like to see those blood sports on the internet, that's where you can find it. Anyway, thanks a lot. Love you guys to death, and I hope to see you next time.